Shush, we started. Nicol Ellen. I'm getting slightly unruly there for a moment. I thought.
I'm going to be talking about money and the place of money in interaction. I've got increasingly interested in money and its the way in which resources from ethnomethodology and conversation analysis might be deployed to get a handle on it and its practices. I should, super opening slide, I owe a debt to Dirk. He used exactly the same format of the ASA in the summer. I liked it so much I just blatantly copied it. These are showing my empirical materials I'll get to in about 5 or 6 minutes' time, which are video recordings of people paying to enter a rather lovely art gallery in the Midlands. And I'm interested in money as material that needs to be extracted from one's person from certain places, moved, touched, passed, exchanged, held back, covered, concealed, and so forth. So towards an account of money's materiality and interaction and some of the social features of money. So that's the thing. This is the first time I've really looked at this data. I've collected it over the summer, but I've done sod all with it for about 3 or 4 months, and this is an opportunity to sort of get it out, dust it down, and look at some bits and bobs of it. And as part of that project is trying to come to terms with the phenomenal social science literature on money, which is alarmingly large and crosses obviously anthropology, economics, sociology, all the ground in social theories have got something to say about flipping money, annoyingly. And trying to work out those bits I can touch into in some sort of way and put my arm around and cuddle up to, and some bits I want to reject. Neoclassical economics has very little to say about money. You'd imagine it would be its thing, right? But it says hardly anything about it other than it's a kind of a functionally necessary solution to the problematics and inefficiencies of barter. Barter often involves rudimentary currencies. So if someone's got an elephant and the going rate for an elephant is 3 tigers and you've just got 2 tigers, you might give the owner of the elephant 2 tigers and a bit of paper saying, I owe you a tiger, thank you. So in that case, it's promissory, it's abstract representation, but it's only between 2 people, and you can only reclaim it for a tiger. So much more effective and efficient it would be if that bit of money was reclaimable to anyone, and not just at the going rate of a tiger, but could be exchanged for any commodity in the marketplace. So much more efficient that would be. And so money just resolves those problems. It resolves the problem that items don't collapse into each other straightforwardly. One motorbike might be worth, you might be 2.5 motorbikes for one car, and you can't have a bit of paper saying half a motorbike. Yeah, so one inefficiency of rudimentary currencies is that they don't really. Yeah. And on the other hand, it's just limited in terms of money's, the promissory character of money is embedded in a relationship between 2 people. So money, the generic currency of money, which when you think about it is phenomenal, that we all ascribe value to these abstract and strange bits of paper and coins around there, is a solution, an amazing historical solution to these rudimentary sort of problems. When did that happen? Why didn't nobody tell me the screen went blank? That's ridiculous of you.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyway, marvellous. If that happens again, you know, just tell me.
It's
been right. Thank you. Yeah. The closer you get to sort of relevance for EMCA treatment of money, as in the grand sociological treatments of money is central to Marx, Zimmel's book on money, appears in Habermas, Giddens, all of them, basically, cutting a very, very long and complicated, theoretically sophisticated story to about 35 seconds. Money figures in part of a general sociological treatment about the nature of modern life, about the flattening of difference, about the disembedding of trust and promissory relations within interpersonal relations to general social systems as a whole. So a sort of breaking down of social relations, that the promissory character of money isn't tied up between 2 people, but a state's relationship to gold, ultimately, becomes a promissory character. And, of course, the encroachment of commodification in the market into all areas of social life. Once money is invented...
It's gone!
Thank you very much. Slightly calmer next time.
I don't do calm.
Slightly freaked me out. We'll go.
It's all right.
I'll
do the...
You mean my slide, man?
Yeah, I'll do the...
Okay, marvellous. Thank you, Charles. So in this case, once the gene is out of the box, there is this abstract currency against which all commodities can be valued, everything can be given a value, from a human life to a work of art to a piece of music and so forth. And that has ramifications which the social theorists are obviously deeply pessimistic about. The social meanings of money approach, there's a book by Zelizer, 1994, Princeton University Press, marvellous book called The Social Meanings of Money, takes umbrage with that kind of grand pessimistic sociological account of replacing money in social theory, and looks at it as a history of the use and place of money, particularly in the household between 1870 and 1930, and looks at the way that the demarcations that people impose upon money, such that $1 isn't the same as the next dollar, isn't the same as the next. So if you inherit £10,000 tomorrow, you might be freer and easier with that £10,000 than £10,000 it took you 3 years to save. You might go and treat yourself, you might think of it differently. If you've come back from holiday and you've got a certain amount of money, you change from euros back into pounds, we'll just go with that one, that's fine. Change into pounds, you might be more willing to sort of spend that free and easy in the duty-free shop than you would just happen to be if you're just strolling down the high street and so forth. And on the other hand, people in contemporary period use different accounts to manage different aspects of their life. They earmark money in different sorts of ways. Zoller's account is kind of wonderful, particularly around the household and the way in which joint accounts emerge and the struggle for women to get their hands on domestic monies and the way in which that's policed and controlled. It's kind of wonderful stuff. So her account very much that $1 isn't the same as the next dollar. The money is inherently personal, it's not fungible, it's kind of written in with social meanings and social relations. I think in terms of an EA EMCA treatment, obviously Zeller is somebody to give a big cuddle to and say, how about going a stage further in terms of money not as impersonal but as personal, and not as generic and abstract but as particular, and explore the place of money interaction, the way in which holding £10 like this can be any number of social actions, that £10 might be different to this £10, might be different to £10 based on its location within a certain order of activity within a particular setting. And of course we probably sort of turn our lip up a little bit of the grand sociological and pessimistic treatments of people such as Zimmel and so forth. This is the rather lovely Compton Verney in Midlands. Well worth a visit, a very nice restaurant, cafe, and standing collections, and they have excellent exhibitions of kind of proper stuff. And that's my son, Elliot, who's a marvellous little chap, and did the research with me. He's very bright. next slide, Prince Charles. This is the counter where the money is going to be passed and exchanged, where people pay, two people, two different cash registers. And if you're interested, that's my camera. Yep. And these are the payment schedule. It's great having Charles like this, I'm going to employ him more regularly, I think. So the only thing to point out here is, that's relevant for the first one, but I'll talk about that then, is this delineation between the standard and the gift aid price. Mm. So the in the UK, if you offer to pay the gift aid price, which is 80p more, they can reclaim tax on the whole price on the £8.80, so they can reclaim something like £3.20 on each ticket if you gift them a certain amount of money. For legal issues which are beyond me, they can't reclaim that on the price. There has to be a gift element to it. But once there's a gift element to it, they can reclaim on the whole. So if you go in and say, I'd like one adult, please, they'll say, would you like to gift aid that? And then you can say yes or no to that. Okay? So you can pay an extra 80p, or you can pay the standard. One interesting thing that we'll look at in the materials is how people, I don't know if I can say this yet, but what I want to say, but I'm not sure if I'm sort of really able to, is the way people get around that question of whether you want to pay gift aid or not. And one thing about that is about the availability of money to hand and the availability of the correct denominations for the non-gift aid price and its presence and so forth. Okay. Right, so there's going to be what I laughingly call analysis now, in three sections. One about money performing actions. So rather than words, currency, coins, standing in as definite first pair parts, definite sort of actions that are oriented to that way, and how that's done, and starting to talk about practices of handling and placing money, the way money is placed, not incidentally, but in kind of recipient design, I suppose. It's just placed to perform the action it's to perform, how that's seeable. A bit on coordination and just the hand-to-hand, like the baton change in athletics of how the money, it seems to be coming out and goes into the hand, and body troubles in terms of the problematics of doing that, of getting that perfectly right is quite tricky, I think. And then a third example about, two or three of the examples show how the way you're handling money can be treated as a conduit to what's on your mind in some way. An illustration of your competent status or realisation of what's happening at the moment. And it's a lovely example of a lot of money being waved around. Thank you very much. This is the first one. So looking at actions performed with money. It's a nice one to start with. So what happens is a lovely old buffer comes along and slaps a £1 coin down, and it's a different slapping a £1 coin on the desk. And in response to the coin going down, he doesn't say anything other than hello. The person working behind the till says, ticket for the grounds, because that's the only, you can't see it down here. Ticket for the grounds. It's a lovely slide design. I was very proud of that, but unfortunately it's only you people can see it. I was very pleased with it. The only price on the board for a pound is access to the lovely grounds that you can walk around. So the pound goes down, and I just want to draw your attention to the way the pound goes down. It's not just placed incidentally at the back of, towards the, away from the cashier. It's right in front of them. And it's placed down and it's moved away. So the pound can be seen as performing an action. It's not incidental the way the pound is placed. It's bound up with the activities at hand. Could you play it, Charles? There's no text there for some reason. So what's nice about this one is that the coin comes out and is seen, placed, do you think it's placed definitively? I think it's placed definitively and it's back. But either it's placed definitively or not, it's seen and oriented to as a complete discrete action, as an attempt to buy a ticket for the grounds. Although the person behind the till doesn't just give him a ticket for the grounds, which they could have done, presumably, just taken the pound and given the ticket and said, no, get off to the grounds with you. Yeah, but they asked and they reformulate it. And the nice thing, one of the things that I like in this one, is the minute the question is produced, it becomes clear that this person doesn't really know if they want a ticket for the grounds or not. And what they subsequently do is lay out their plans for the day, that they want to go to the grounds, then have lunch, then go and see the Constable exhibition, to enable the person behind the till to work out what ticket they actually want. As it turns out, the standard entry includes tickets for the grounds. So the £8 entry includes that £1. It doesn't say that on the till. But so he lays out the problems so you can see it. And if you look at the clip again, once those problems become apparent, he looks up to the board, the price board behind the cashier, and the hand comes back over to conceal the pound, both practically and symbolically as an item that might be sort of, might need to be removed in some way. Just have a look at the way the hand comes back over. So it comes back over to conceal it, to hide the pound, to touch it, and then it is withdrawn, but it's not withdrawn immediately until he holds off from withdrawing. So that's the first one, paying with the right money, and how the right money can speak to and be seen as an attempt to perform a particular kind of action. And the idea that money is placed in specific ways, kind of recipient design for, to perform different sorts of actions. It's not placed anywhere on the counter, over there, not over there, just placed in certain points. And one thing we'll see is overwhelmingly, I've got about 250 encounters, and 247 of them, they pay just here. And this is one of the rogue ones where she goes on the backhand for some reason, but virtually everybody pays just there. And the money is typically in about 70 of 100, 110 examples. The money is actually right on the edge, sometimes over, just over the edge. The note is just teetering, very dramatic material to look at. So in this one, it's very nice. I don't know if I can argue this about circumventing the give day question, because it's making an account for something that's not done, and that's a hard thing to do analytically, right? But it's a nice one, I think, because the cashier, the guy working here, is over here dealing with something else for a while. And she's sorting out the money. Gets £10 out. She wants two concessionary tickets, which is £12. Gets £10 out, then goes to the wallet to get another 10 out, then puts the 10 back in the wallet and gets a £2 coin out, puts that on the £10, and when they say two concessions please, pushes the money forward. And that just, the money is gone, thank you, that's it. You don't get the gift aid question. I'm not even implying it's straight, it doesn't matter if it's strategy, might just want more change. But it's enough to do it. When the money comes out first, then it's taken, you don't get the gift aid. If you go and you don't have the money to hand, you just hold a wallet, say standard ticket please, you get the gift aid question. But the money being present and offered and done is enough to circumvent that. Just have a... I think that one... Thank you. it's a lovely example of the money being to hand. Now, you can't see it yet, of course, but in a large number of these, the money doesn't come out until later on. The price is told, you get the price, then you get the money. But in these ones, the money is up front, and it's organised in specific denominations, and that has sort of consequences for actions. So, the first one is about money performing these sorts of actions. Let's just have a look at, a very short amount of time, transferring money hand-to-hand, baton style. And just to point to a couple of things. One rather nice one is that when people do get embroiled in the gift aid thing, where they don't either want to or somehow unable to avoid the gift aid question and pay the gift aid, then often they've got their money out ready. Then they get the gift aid stuff and their money's hanging around for a while. And one thing people do quite a lot is when it finally comes to the relevant place of payment, people say, right, that's 880 then. The money's right in front of them and right in front of the cashier, but they'll touch it. That's 880, they touch. So they touch, glance, shove a little bit, move, attend to, the money becomes relevant, becomes kind of reanimated or enlivened. And there are three examples. This is a card. The card is just nudged. The card is just... Did you see the card being nudged? People don't just leave it. And where it's placed, I mean, the card is just there, and the money turns out to be just there, that money's just there. It's not a requirement that it's moved. You know, it's not attending to the fact that it's hard to reach or hard to get. It's a broader attentiveness to the point we're at now in the interaction where certain things are relevant. Taking this money is now relevant. I'm going to display my attentiveness to kind of where we are at the moment through touching this money. And often it's moved in increments. If you just sort of delete the people from the encounter, you'll see that the money doesn't just sit there on the counter, it moves around, and it's moved back, and it's taken, and then definite things are done with it at certain kinds of points. Because I'm dashing through these last ones for reasons of time. The baton change, I think Jean Lerner has done something on this in terms of passing objects hand to hand. I think one of the examples I was told by somebody that one of the examples is money. I've not managed to see it myself. Well, what we have in both of these two are a money to hand, and instead of being on the table and pushed or touched over, it's kind of handed. And that turns out to be quite a foxy thing to do, actually, because the timing just has to be right. And often people, these are two examples of kind of troubles, where the hand goes out and it's just not exactly the right time. Mm-hmm. And what do you do? You know, you feel a bit of an idiot if you just left it. Yeah, there's a case of how long you're going to leave it dangling in midair, as it were. And yeah, so and people leave it for a very short amount of time, yeah, and they see that it's not the time, and it goes down. So in this example that you know only these eight people here are going to be able to see, it's a nice one because he has the £10 out and tries to give it straight away, tries to do the money up front straight away, but it's not taken. So the money then goes down onto the counter and then it's pushed. So you get kind of recourse from dump, 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 but it's seeing that the time's not quite right. Let's just have a quick look. One little repair there. Do you see the little repair? The hand comes out and is down and then up from the cash out. I'll play it again. So the customer's a bit late on that one. Yep. Now the other one, the customer's too early. So it's out, it's drawn, and that happens fast. That's just 2.5 seconds. And it's out, and it's back, and it's down, and it's across. Very finely judged competences of handling money. We tend to experience kind of our competences handling money when we're abroad. You know, I often feel like I'm on the cusp of being mugged all the time in America, because all the notes there are all the same size, and there's loads of them. It's like, oh, what's going on with this money? And I feel like incompetent. But in these sort of cases, these are more finely judged and honed sort of competences of passing the thing across. I just want to show this one because I've got about 3 minutes left. This is a lovely one where it's slightly different. The money isn't bound up simply with making a payment, but with the social relations between the the party of three, and you can just see in the image. This person here who's in the kind of the payment position, first to the desk, first in motion, is getting the wallet out at the moment, wants to pay for these three people. Oh, I'll pay for you, darlings. Oh, no, you mustn't. No, you mustn't. You mustn't. And so, and the money's out. They're like middle-aged gunslingers with their purses out and their wallets drawn. And the pounds come out and they're waved around. And people are pushing the money. No, just yeah, no. And the money's slid back. It's very dramatic. Data. Biscuits from Dorset Clip. But it's lovely because the requirement to re-explain what's going on to this person is because the money's still out. So this person here takes the money back, the money's pushed back, takes money back, puts it in the wallet, and puts the wallet away, and by doing that displays their attentiveness and appreciation of what's happened. They've accepted a gift, the gift's on the cards and they've accepted it. Whereas this person hasn't, the wallet's still out. That's not a visible display that they've got a handle on that. And so there's the re-explanation isn't incidental, it's attentive to the configuration of the scene at that moment. It's rather lovely. Okay. So, as you can see, I don't have a proper analysis yet or anything. I'm just sort of cutting this stuff up and having a look at it and seeing how it might be interesting, how the particular narratives of money might be found, how handling money might be imbued with various sorts of things, and how the personal and local nature of money might be sort of mapped in terms of the actions you can do with it and circumvent by the accessibility of the way money is held, how that might give you access to a person's thoughts, attention, appreciation of a scene and the situation, and the kind of rudimentary competences that we have of transferring and handling money. And so I think there's a springboard off social meanings of money's approach with kind of an EMCA thing. In terms of the highest tariff, I just want to challenge you to do this. Next time you have money or out and about, this is the highest tariff, most difficult handling money thing. Did you see it? God. What a genius. That's not for the faint-hearted, is it, that one? Okay, that's it.
Yes. I think about extract two. I think it's really interesting. You said that's a kind of, in some sense, a deviant case compared to some of the others. And it's kind of like the configuration of the bag to the person, to the attendant. In some senses, this bag is acting as a shield to the kind of central visions that are going on there. So it's almost like she set up this little space because you've got a monitor there, the bag there. You can't really see what she's doing with her. So she's kind of coordinating her actions behind this space. So. She's getting this money out, so it's not available to see that on Twitter or how that she had it in 10 pounds. And equally, both of them, the first one and the second one, give the money at a specific point. They think they've got the right money, but then they look at the board at exactly that same point. And there's something about the fact I'm attending to that I'm giving you one now, but I'm doing checking. I don't have to orient it to you anymore about negotiation.
It's about the definitiveness of the action. I think that plays really well with the first one, less well with the second one, because you can't see it from the video, but the server person guy isn't there, isn't attending, he's off kind of behind doing something else and then sort of comes back. Whereas
the bag, because coming off this one, the bag's there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. But I think the point about the board is a kind of good one, particularly with the second one. What you don't see is 20 seconds beforehand, this person is really studying the board and has done the work of working out that it's £12. They know it's £12. And the guy as well, looked at the board before.
Yeah, it's that thing about doing looking. I've
yeah.
done my homework. I
exactly.
My map, which I do whenever I go to my favourite concert.
Exactly. The visual orientation thing is another, as a paper that I'm going to do out of this, and the place of the interaction uses of the board and what it does. And one thing it does is, as you say, you can be taken to works out. If you look at the board and kind of are studying it, you're doing studying it, and then you put the money down, that's you firm up your action.
Just three quick points there. The transaction itself, this sort of museum entry, is obviously very it's very influential on the way that they're handling money. They can see the price behind them. They're not actually receiving any goods. Because I think when you're buying something which is physical, which is given to you, then that transactional process is quite different with money. And then we're usually going hand to hand.
Do they actually get a ticket?
In certain circumstances. You don't always put your money down, for example.
Yeah.
There are other places where you actually go hand to hand.
Yeah.
But that might be interesting to look at. Where's the differences there?
Yeah.
Which reminds me that lots of this is incredibly culturally embedded and culturally learned, so that if you actually look at different in different cultures, for example, you'll see that these ways of behaving are quite different. I spent quite a lot of my time in Denmark, where the Danes, generally speaking, do not touch hands when they give money. They don't put money into your hands, and I quite frequently forget this, so I'll put my hand out and the money's put on the table next to me. So what do I do with my hand? Disappear and and then thirdly, there's a fantastic little clip on YouTube that you might have a look at. It's with Michael McIntyre, a stand-up comedian, who does this great little sketch where people in England are paying in Scottish notes and what they do with them and how do they show them. And
Eric paid today with a Scottish £10 note and I picked him up on it. It's not real.
One more quick question or comment? Yeah.
It's particular at the beginning of the generic versus local organisation appeal. I thought that was a really nice point, but I guess you hit that point that PM is so conventionalised that you're just saying, it's cultural, but also in a way that every restaurant owns its own way of PM. And when first time you go to that restaurant, you don't know what the appeal there.
Yeah.
And then next time you know. So, nice to show that even though it's such a conventionalised one, it's still dependent on its
local organisation.
But it doesn't necessarily mean you can't respect the people who are talking about the conventionality.
But also, I suppose, in this sort of setting, what interested me, it's mainly, kind of like certain forms of data that circulate in CA. It's a very middle class, kind of fairly aged population of people buying these tickets, and just the amount of money around as well, and the contingencies of money versus cards and electronic money versus cash denominations. And the first two actions, you can only do them with cash. You can't pay the money with a card. You can't. Yeah? So in terms of the production of social activities, money is kind of more resourceful than cards. You can do different things with it because it's more flexible. It has those sorts of characteristic features.
Okay, thanks again to you.